Hang on. If estrogen directly modulates dopamine in the brain, and dopamine is essential to executive function like emotional regulation, impulse control, motivation, and thinking, and for women, estrogen looks like this over a lifespan, this is the male version, then why has it taken us so long to just start understanding the impact of hormones on women with ADHD? I'm back with posters, and I'm a little worked up. Now, everyone knows that women's emotions can be affected by their menstrual cycle. But here's the thing. Researchers are just now beginning to understand that for women with ADHD, those fluctuations in estrogen have a magnified effect. And we're not talking that women with ADHD are a little bit more cranky or something. The research shows that women with ADHD were almost twice as likely to experience severe PMS, also known as PMDD. They were three times as likely to have postpartum depression, and nearly four standard deviations from the norm with perimenopausal symptoms. So in English, that means that perimenopause really, really sucks for ADHDers. Now, I wasn't officially diagnosed with ADHD until age 41, and even then, a quarter of the way into the 21st century, no one told me that one of the reasons that my emotions were so unpredictable and difficult to manage was because my ADHD is affected by estrogen. Why didn't they tell me? It's because medical training and research have been built around male bodies, and when women's symptoms didn't line up with ADHD research, they were often dismissed as in your head or just anxiety. So that dismissal meant that hormone research was misinterpreted or stalled for decades. So we're literally decades behind where we should be, where the science should be. So as a result, ADHD in girls and women is underdiagnosed, underresearched, undertreated, despite the massive impact that ADHD has on women's mental and physical health. Thankfully, we're just getting to the first stages of research to understand how hormones impact ADHD, the symptoms, and what that means for treatment options. So in this video, we're gonna explore the research on how hormones interact with ADHD across the lifespan, from puberty through the menstrual cycle, and of course through perimenopause and menopause. And we'll also look at how fluctuating hormones change the way that ADHD meds get metabolized in the brain. So this, like, as I read this research, I was like, wow, this is life-changing. Like, my mind was blown, and so many things make sense for me now. So let's look at some of the things that we know and some of the things you can do to get your ADHD brain to work with your hormonal body, not against it. Okay, and just so you know, we'll be referencing this research from Frontiers in Global Women's Health with Sandra Kuge as the lead researcher. Okay, plus a ton of other studies. All right, so first, let's explore what's going on here. Why do hormonal shifts impact ADHD symptoms and contribute to so many other linked conditions? The short answer is estrogen modulates dopamine. It's synthesis, maintenance, and degradation. So because of the research on male subjects, we already know that people with ADHD struggle with attention, motivation, executive function, memory, impulse control, and emotional regulation. Dopamine is a key neurotransmitter for regulating those functions. And ADHDers have dysregulated levels of dopamine in their brain. What we're learning now is that estrogen helps the dopamine signals in the brain work more smoothly. So estrogen supports our ability to think things through and use our braking systems and sort through multiple thoughts at once. If you want to learn more about emotion regulation and ADHD, check out my other video to learn about the key role of executive function on emotion management. Now, higher estrogen is linked to better attention and better executive function, and this is true whether you have ADHD or not. But when estrogen is low or variable, that undermines the brain's ability to efficiently use dopamine, which leads to worse attention, worse memory, impulse control, and emotional regulation. And this is one of the reasons why when estrogen levels drop in perimenopause, women, not just ADHD women, but many women across the spectrum often experience brain fog. So estrogen is really important to our ability to manage our lives and our emotions, but women don't just have lifespan variations in their estrogen levels. I mean, obviously, we also have variations. It also varies every 28 days with our menstrual cycle. So this blue one here is estrogen. And obviously it peaks during that ovulatory phase. It even fluctuates between morning and nighttime. So this is midnight to midnight. And estrogen is much higher the first half of your waking hours and lower the second half of the day. Even neurotypical women were more hyperactive when their estrogen levels drop. And that happens like in post-ovulation as well. Studies also show that when estrogen levels drop in the second half of the cycle, that women experience worse attention, impulsivity, and emotional regulation. And so when you have ADHD, this seems to have these compounding effects. So these estrogen variations also impact how well meds work, ADHD meds work, and we'll come back to that. Okay, so ADHD makes your dopamine kind of weird, and estrogen levels make it even weirder. This is great. Let's step back and see how ADHD affects female health throughout her lifespan. Children with ADHD experienced delayed development in their brain's cortical thickness. Studies show that female children and adults with ADHD experience differences in their executive function from males, and this is not studied enough. Girls tend to have more challenges with vocabulary, intellectual abilities, and visuospatial reasoning. I cannot say that word. Okay, while boys and men show worse response inhibition, cognitive flexibility, slower processing speed, and more deficits in motor functioning than girls and women. And because most studies have been male-dominated, the girls' symptoms tend to be missed as fitting under ADHD. Not only are their symptoms different and that leads to them being less likely to be diagnosed with ADHD, but girls with ADHD are much more likely to mask their symptoms and be more socially compliant. And all of this can lead to girls with ADHD being diagnosed less frequently and later in life than males. Even when girls are diagnosed, they are less likely to receive ADHD meds than boys. Isn't this fun? Women just get crappy medical treatment. Okay, on top of girls not receiving the same support for their ADHD as boys get, without a diagnosis, it can harm how they feel about themselves. They might wonder, what's the matter with me? Or they feel bad, broken, stupid, lazy, etc. And this can help explain why women have higher risks of co-occurring mental health diagnoses like depression and anxiety with their ADHD. So, moving on to puberty, I really wish we had some good research about ADHD and the onset of menarche. I found exactly two studies on this, one of which suggests that neurodiverse females start puberty later than their neurotypical friends. That study wasn't ADHD specific. The other study showed no difference between the two groups. And again, we just simply need more research on our half of the population. Now, I personally started my period super late, but that was probably because I was exercising like 4 hours a day to manage my hyperactivity without meds or a diagnosis. And look, like I still think my hyperactivity is a gift, but it would have been nice to have a name for it back then. So regardless of when a girl starts puberty, once she does, it really can affect both ADHD symptoms and medication efficacy. There are limited studies showing that stimulant medication works better for some girls right before ovulation. So this means that girls might benefit from tailoring stimulant dosing across a monthly cycle instead of a static dose every single day. Attitude magazine summarized another study showing that compared to boys, girls reported a stronger effect from short-acting methylphenidate earlier in the day, but it also wears off much sooner. Atomoxetine also appears to produce a greater effect on girls' emotional regulation and hyperactivity and impulsivity compared to boys. But we still have so little information about this to understand how medication interacts with girls differently from boys. Okay, so as girls move into puberty, the way their estrogen levels change daily and monthly impacts their ADHD symptoms and their ability to metabolize ADHD meds. Also, when we look at stimulant medication during puberty, girls have different and more frequent adverse side effects, but we don't know why or much about it. Like, we just literally don't know how these medications impact women and females. Seems kind of important. Like, let's get some more research in this area, people. Okay? All right, let's talk about sexual health. Okay, yes, and I did spell that wrong. I was in a hurry. Forgive me. Women with ADHD are more likely to engage in risky sexual behaviors compared to non-ADHD women. There's an increased likelihood of earlier sexual activity, multiple or risky sexual partners, less frequent use of contraception, higher rates of STDs, and unplanned teen pregnancies. Women with ADHD are 6 times as likely to become mothers before 20 than neurotypicals. So why is this? Some risk factors include impulsivity and executive function deficits, like planning and thinking things through, and increased substance abuse. On a separate note, females with ADHD have higher likelihood of being victims of sexual abuse, and they're also more likely to identify as gay or transgender than their peers. Birth control for girls is another important thing to figure out when you have ADHD. My posters are in the wrong order. Yes, I do make my own posters. IUDs may be a better option for women with ADHD than pills. So not only do IUDs not require you to remember to take your pill every day, but oral contraceptives increase the risk of depression up to 5 times in women with ADHD. That would have been good for me to know about a decade ago. Maybe doctors should start telling women about this. When I did birth control, I was crazy for like a week. Like I was just crying for like a week straight, and I ended up changing to something else. So moving on, there are very few studies, 4 to be exact, that indicate that during pregnancy, women with ADHD experience more stress, depression, anxiety, and less social support than neurotypicals. They're more likely to continue smoking and drinking during pregnancy. They're more likely to have birth complications, including preeclampsia, C-sections, and premature births as well. Mothers with ADHD have a significantly higher risk, a 5 to 6 times risk of developing postpartum depression and anxiety disorders. And there's just mixed studies about the safety of using ADHD medication during pregnancy. So basically, like, we don't even know. So let's do some research on women. How about that, right? More research is needed. Women with ADHD might experience elevated rates of PCOS, now called PMOS, and possibly premature or primary ovarian insufficiency. Women with endometriosis also have an increased risk of later diagnosis of ADHD. And we don't exactly know why these factors are connected, but one of the theories is that it might have to do with inflammation. But really, we don't know how the uterus and ADHD are connected because no one has studied it. More studies are needed. Okay, folks, now we are onto the part many of you have been waiting for. Drum roll, please. Perimenopause! Woohoo! When women go through perimenopause, the estrogen levels plummet. Many women, neurotypical women, experience memory, attention issues, sleep issues, mood swings, brain fog, difficulty making words, and poor cognitive functioning. When estrogen decreases, the brain also appears to shrink in volume at this time of life. And all of this seems to compound with the already present symptoms of ADHD in women. So while 30% of all women experience debilitating perimenopause symptoms, that number is 54.2% for women with ADHD. Here's the other crazy thing. These issues don't wait until you're in your late 40s or 50s. For most people with ADHD, the most severe symptoms came 10 years earlier than average. That's like between the ages of 35 to 39. Attitude Magazine did a survey of nearly 5,000 women with ADHD to ask about the impact of perimenopause. And more than 93% said they noticed a difference in the severity of ADHD symptoms during perimenopause and or menopause. And in contrast, less than 6% said ADHD had the biggest impact before age 20. 70% of women said ADHD had a life-altering impact in their 40s and 50s, with 50% of women calling their ADHD symptoms extremely severe. The most debilitating symptoms were procrastination and time management, working memory problems, feelings of being overwhelmed, and greater disorganization. One woman who was surveyed said, "Everything flared up in perimenopause. I feel the worst I've ever felt, and my life is in disarray. I am unemployed, without a fixed address, lonely, anxious, depressed, and can't think straight. I've turned my life, which appeared to be running well enough, into a blazing dumpster fire. A 52-year-old who was diagnosed with ADHD at age 50 said, in perimenopause, the brain fog and memory inattention, distractibility, perfectionism, hyperactivity, and restlessness issues became progressively worse. I have always had these symptoms, but I was able to manage them with systems that I created for myself. My ability to manage them has declined significantly, and this makes these symptoms seem like they are the worst they have ever been. Whew! Not only are there biological changes contributing to your ability to function during perimenopause and menopause, but it's also one of the most mentally heavy periods in a woman's life, because it's when women are often managing their home, their family, their career, their marriage, their aging parents, or their in-laws. So it's easy to see how ADHD plus menopause plus mental load often lead to the straw that breaks the camel's back. Okay, so what can we do about it? What options do we have? There are a few pieces of hope so far. One study found that estrogen supplementation seems to help with both cognition and mood. But this study found mixed results in long-term cognitive function. We just don't have enough studies showing that HRT helps ADHD symptoms. But my personal experience has found it helpful. And in another Attitude magazine article, Kit Parrington wrote that while not for everyone, hormone replacement therapy was the beginning of getting my life back. It gave my brain the biochemical support it needed to function again. As estrogen was restored and my nervous system began to calm, so did the touch aversion. The person who loved warmth and physical connection was not gone. Sleep, exercise, a protein-rich diet, and avoiding highly stimulating environments where possible are all meaningful supports alongside medical treatment. Biologically, it makes sense that estrogen supplementation could help ADHD symptoms in perimenopause and menopause. What about progesterone? For some people, progesterone helps decrease anxiety and hyperactivity. For others, it increases brain fog, fatigue, and procrastination symptoms. Progesterone alone is not shown to improve ADHD symptoms, but it may help sleep or anxiety in some cases. So estrogen supplementation has a lot more evidence of cognitive benefits. Okay, so yeah, I am not a doctor, but if you're female and over 35, I would encourage you to speak with a menopause-informed doctor. Okay, medication is an effective treatment option for ADHD, but it seems that when estrogen is low, ADHD symptoms are worse and meds aren't as effective. Only one preliminary study found that increasing stimulant meds when estrogen drops in your menstrual cycle improves medication efficiency. So my hope is that there's a future where women's ADHD meds come in a 28-day cycle that increases the dose during those low estrogen periods. I think that would be super cool. But guess what? We are probably decades out from this because we don't have enough research to know the answer. And as my favorite ADHD therapist expert, Kirsten Walters, reminded me, ADHD meds are controlled substances. So you can't just get some like extra to take on your bad days. We also don't have good evidence on best dosing practices for ADHD medication through menopause and postmenopause. So basically, like, seriously, it's time to get some studies done on this. Okay, what about menstruating women with ADHD? We know that PMS can be a lot worse than average for women with ADHD. So what can we do about that? I mean, first line of defense is start by tracking your menstrual cycle and your symptoms. You can use paper or a phone app to do this. I use just the Apple Health app. And just start to pay attention, like, when is ADHD the hardest? A lot of people see this in the luteal phase. My Apple Health app also gives me a little reminder about 5 days before my period starts, and this helps me keep in mind that I might start to feel terrible about myself and everyone around me, and to just be patient and more compassionate toward myself. Some people think about or consider adjusting their work and their social calendar around their menstrual cycle. You might find that you're able to do more mentally difficult work during the first half of your cycle, and maybe you need a little bit more rest or gentleness towards the last week of your cycle. I would say it's important to adjust your expectations and not just try harder. If your brain is slower during the luteal phase, instead of pushing harder, maybe you want to consider like simplifying your load or making a few things easier or taking a few things off your plate so you have a little bit more bandwidth. And during that luteal phase, it might be helpful to externalize executive function more. So that means you might need to add in more reminders, break tasks down into smaller steps and use more body-based activation. So movement is better than thinking in this stage. And then the fourth thing I would say is like plan when possible your demanding tasks earlier in your cycle. You can try using the follicular phase for big decisions, creative work, complex planning, things like that. As you track your cycle and you gain more awareness of your cycle and your brain's needs, you'll hopefully find it easier to be compassionate toward yourself. And I think this can really help decrease some of the lows that come with being ADHD and female. Okay, so hormones and especially estrogen really impact executive function and ADHD symptoms. We can't treat women with a male-based ADHD model. We need more research focusing on understanding women and their needs, and we need to tailor treatment plans to our female bodies. I am really happy to see that the tide is turning and like a lot of new research is starting to come out. It's important that we move cautiously. I think there's a growing online trend of blaming everything on low hormones or low dopamine or on ADHD. And I think that's too simplistic. ADHD is primarily a neurodevelopmental condition. Hormones modulate it, but they don't cause or cure it. And when we understand more about the unique way that estrogen impacts ADHD in women, we can get better at tailoring interventions like medication, HRT, and behavioral strategies so that women can get the very specific help they need. For all you women out there, like, we don't need to change women with ADHD. I mean, there's a lot of beautiful things about my ADHD, and I'm 100% sure that, like, my YouTube channel is thanks to my ADHD. Like, a lot of the beautiful, wonderful things I've made and created and do every day are thanks to my ADHD and my femaleness, right? So we're not trying to change that. The goal is to understand your brain in its context and work with its patterns. And when you can do that, it can make things a lot better. Okay, I hope you found this helpful. I'll link the studies and articles below. And if you'd like more support and education about how to manage your emotions, you could check out my membership. I've created a course with 31 lessons and a workbook that will help you learn skills to process your emotions. So thank you so much for being here. Please take care, and we'll see you soon.